Hello and welcome to On the Corner, the official podcast of PitchList.com. I'm your host, Eric Samulski, joined by Nick Pollock. And I guess I should take a sip of my coffee, too, since you're taking a sip of your coffee.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, fantasy football is stupid. Thank you so much for asking. And what is happening? We are in December right now.
We are.
And it's important for us not necessarily to do specific player analysis, but rather understanding what that process is. And if you went to First Pitch Arizona, you would have seen the lovely Eric Samulski.
That's me. Stop.
And also, you would have seen him give a presentation that I thought was just so fantastic that I said, Eric, we have to do a OTC episode dedicated to this concept and exploration. And what is that, Eric?
Yeah, so I called it What Makes a Top 25 Starting Pitcher. And I tried to just look at overarching trends of what makes a top 25 starting pitcher. What do the top 25 starting pitchers have in common? So if we are trying to say, okay, which pitchers are likely going to finish in the top 25, we can go beyond just saying, hey, this guy's really good. And try to say, okay, this guy, you know, kind of meets the threshold of his swing and miss stuff or his fastball command or his whatever. And so I looked at a bunch of different overlapping traits. I tried to limit like the surface level stats, right? We understand that top 25 pitchers have good ERAs and low whips and like high overall strikeout totals, because those things just, you're not going to be a top 25 starting pitcher if you don't have that.
Right.
But what skills go into helping people to achieve those surface level stats? And I dug in primarily to this past season, 2025. And I was able to do some kind of like surface level checking of previous seasons, but I didn't go into detail of like all the top 25 starters in 2024, all the top 25 starters in 2023, and like really kind of dig into the minutiae of it all.
Right. So what made this such a fun presentation for me is actually one of the hardest parts for us is where do we put these guys for our rankings at the start of the year? And the way that Eric broke it down for certain players is saying, well, what are the options? What are the paths to them becoming one or falling out of it? And it illuminated some really fun things. So Eric, who is the first pitcher that you want to highlight asking, okay, is this the makeup of a top 25 pitcher?
Well, I'll just point out just a couple of very quick numbers to start. The reason why I think this exercise is useful is I did in a check in an ADP check of this past year's top 25. So where were they drafted? And obviously, you know, we dealt with injuries to Logan Gilbert and Corbin Burns and Cole Reagans and Garrett Cole and Michael King and Pablo Lopez. So like there are a lot of guys who wound up in the top 25 because of injuries, but this does happen every year. So the average ADP of the top 25 starting pitchers was 182. Of the top 25 starting pitchers, only six of them were drafted inside the top 50 overall picks. Of the top 25 starting pitchers, only 12 of them were drafted inside of the top 100 picks.
That's so wild. So
more than half of the top 25 starting pitchers came outside of the top 100. And actually, seven of the top 25 starting pitchers were drafted outside of the top 200 picks. So
now, right now, everybody, just think to yourselves, who were those pitchers?
Yeah.
Just try and figure it out. We'll tell you as we go, but just try and figure that one out.
So to me, I think that's also important in what we're going to discuss today, because it's not just like, okay, yeah, Tarek Skubal, like he's going to be in the top 25 if he's healthy. Garrett Crochet, Paul Skeens, like all those guys.
Right.
It's that realistically, you have a pretty good shot, and you have in years past too, of getting a top 25 starting pitcher that you draft outside of the top 100 picks. Mm-hmm. So what are the qualities that those pitchers tend to have? And then if you are kind of doing that tiebreaker outside of the top 100 picks of like, should I take this guy? What's his upside? It's kind of like how many of these traits does he actually possess, and what's the path forward?
Absolutely.
So I just want to point out a couple of quick things before we get to these guys.
Okay.
Okay. Obviously you want durability. Okay.
100%. If you were there at First Pitch Arizona, you saw, you might think, how do you draft pitchers past pick 300? Right. And it was saying, look, there are all these different ways of chasing them, whether it's expecting health, whether it's expecting opportunity. The thing that matters most is volume.
Yes.
For success.
17 of the top 25 starting pitchers last year had one or no seasons in their career under 120 innings. Only five of those top 25 starting pitchers have had more than two seasons with under 120 innings. So I wanted to bring that up because the first two pitchers that I want to talk to you about are teammates, and it's Tyler Glasnow and Blake Snell.
Yeah.
Because if you go by those numbers, Blake Snell has only two seasons in his career over 130 innings pitched. Tyler Glasnow has only one season in his career over 120 innings pitched. The numbers would tell you they should not be drafted in the top 25 because their durability issues make it incredibly difficult for them to finish as top 25 starting pitchers. However, from a skills standpoint, they check all the boxes of top 25 starting pitchers. And I think these are the types of guys that we struggle with the most because it's not a binary decision. It is a lot of fudging and a lot of gray area, and it's hard to decide where to finally put them.
Yeah, and one thing I really need to mention is it's a different strategy too for drafting these guys in your 15 team formats, NFBC. Or if it's your 10-teamer and 12-teamer. And why is that? Because the replacement level pitcher for when Glasnow's on the IL, well, combine that with the other innings of Tyler Glasnow, and there is all of a sudden a lot of value, even if he misses significant time. Mm-hmm. However, there's a difference between 130 innings from him or someone else going 130 but never hitting the IL. Or if it's, again, NFBC that has no IL spots, then that is actually a major factor. So do keep that in mind. We're not necessarily saying, hey, this guy is outside the top 25 pitchers of the Player Rater, thus he's not worth it. There are those scenarios that they are. And also Player Rater, I generally hate, but I like inside the top 25. I hate outside of that because then it just only rewards volume and it really does not take into account the replacement level at all. Yeah. So it gets more and more exposed to that the deeper you go.
I will say, you know, this did impact my ranking a little bit, acknowledging that you're relying on a waiver wire pickup to pair with these guys far more than you would. Yeah. And so currently in my rankings, like I have Snell 15th and I have Glasnow down at 23rd. I almost actually pushed Glasnow out of the top 25 altogether for the two reasons of one, he's not as good as Snell when he's healthy. Snell has just been better when they're on the mound. And two is that Tyler Glasnow may be the only pitcher who is less healthy than Blake Snell. And so Blake Snell's health edge on Tyler Glasnow and is better than Tyler Glasnow. And so I think some of the names that we will get to in this podcast, like you could argue, just rank them over Glasnow because maybe they're not as good, but they have durability and maybe they get you a top 25 appearance alone without even worrying about player guys.
Yeah. I mean, I'm finding myself, you know, I put out my rankings at the end of October and I'm looking at it now and I already know some updates. I'm going to be lowering Shota Imanaga. I'm going to be lowering Glasnow, probably Blake Snell too. Jacob Mizorowski. And that means that like Freddie Peralta, Nick Pivetta, Eury Pérez are going to be above all of those names in all likelihood.
So now we'll get into some of the non-injury names, and I'll just say some of the things that we are going to look at because some of the traits that I looked at, we know we want strikeout upside. So for me, I looked at swinging strike rate, not just like, hey, does he get a lot of strikeouts?
Sure.
Swinging strike rate overall, and my cutoff was kind of like around 14%. The average swinging strike rate for the top 25 starting pitchers was 13.7%, which was better than the league average for starting pitchers of 11. I also looked at strikeout upside on secondary pitches. You and I have talked about this a bunch. that in order to be a really good starting pitcher, having a secondary that you can get whiffs on is
super right. Important. Oh man.
And so only four of the starting pitchers who finished in the top 25 didn't have a primary secondary pitch with at least a 15% swinging strike rate. Mm-hmm. So you kind of want that as your marker of at least one really plus secondary pitch for whiffs. I looked at hit suppression. You know, you and I have talked about this in the past too, that like hit suppression is a pitcher stat to me. There's a little bit of luck baked into it, but guys who command the zone and can sequence pitches and mix and match well can get softer contact, can lead to fewer hits. I looked at relative command, not just walk rate, and I looked at that as basically like strikeout minus walk rate, because if your walk rate is a little high but your strikeout rate is also super high, you can be a valuable fantasy pitcher. You and I have talked a lot about having an impactful four-seam fastball as a foundation or primary fastball. So I looked at how often they threw their primary fastball and whether they could command that primary fastball or not. And then a deep pitch mix. Nine of the top 25 starting pitchers regularly throw at least six pitches. That's 10% or more. Only three of the top 25 starting pitchers threw just three pitches. So a deep pitch mix tended to be something that was useful. And then the last one was just having, again, a deep pitch mix for both righties and lefties.
Right.
So we've talked about this a bunch too, not being just a one pitch or two pitch pitcher against one handedness. And I thought that was very useful.
Absolutely. So, I mean, this is just such a good framework of like, okay, I mean, this stuff we've talked about before, but it does put it into just a really good reference point of, hey, how much of this is wish casting? How much of this is just a foundational success?
Yeah. So the first name here, who you and I both have in the top 25, but some people don't, is Shane Bieber.
Oh, yeah. Easy. Easy, easy, easy. Yes. Keep going.
So I looked at Shane Bieber, and it's like the only thing that he missed on in terms of like traits is that his fastball velocity was a little below the league average for starting pitchers. And that's not just coming off of injury. Like it, his fastball velocity is a little below the league average for starting pitchers. But he has always had really good hit suppression. His fastball zone rate is about league average. He's got five pitches, multiple fastball variations, slider to righties, change to lefties. He throws at least four pitches to both righties and lefties. We've seen him be an ace before. We saw him come back healthy. Like, to me, this was a slam dunk top 25 pick.
Yeah, I mean, Shane Bieber to me is it's the perfect blend of unknown and known, where because he came in halfway through the season, Bieber isn't being regarded as highly as I think he should be. Mm-hmm. So we've seen so many times guys throw half a season after Tommy John and then carry that into the next year. I think it's actually like the best rehab process, honestly, for them to rejoin the team in like July or so. And yeah, as you mentioned, fastballs for strikes, multiple breaking balls for whiffs. He has the volume. He has the situation. He actually is signed with the Jays even since I put him at 19 on mine. So yeah, I'm very much in on Shane Bieber. He is a top 25 guy.
One guy who I didn't mention in the presentation, but I mentioned him in the presentation in terms of red flags, but I think he's frequently ranked inside of the top 25. I currently have him 26th, so just outside of the top 25, but it is also new Toronto Blue Jay, Dylan Cease.
Yes.
And we've kind of talked about how hard it is to, you know, pin down the real Dylan Cease. What stood out for me was that last year his fastball command was the 8th percentile, his four-seam fastball command. And that's not a new thing for Dylan Cease.
And you're saying command based on what?
So I know you and I disagree a little bit on this. I like using zone rate because I want to know that you aren't reliant on chases to get those strikes with your fastball.
So I would now, say that, yeah, so that's more control then, right? Just inside the zone, four-seamer and confidence. Yeah.
Again, as we can also admit, just being able to throw the fastball in the zone doesn't mean you have good command of it, because maybe you throw it right down the middle.
Right.
But for me, in this kind of like inexact science of like I want fastballs in the zone, but I don't want them down the middle of the plate. But I do want to know that you can get ahead with your fastball, because sure. I think that's really important to set up secondaries. And if you can't throw a fastball in the strike zone, it's hard to get ahead. Now, Dylan Cease's strike rate on his four-seam fastball was 23rd percentile for starting pitchers. It was just over 63% strike rate. So that was below average too. And then you also look at it like, is he a two-pitch pitcher? Because it's 82% four-seam or slider usage, and there's like some nominal curveball usage. We've seen him try to, you know, bring in a sinker, bring in a cutter, and like, yeah, I guess he technically throws a sinker, but like he doesn't use it that much. And so he's got only one fastball variation as well. And I just have a lot of concerns about this as a top 25 profile.
Yeah, no, I very much understand this. It comes down to you're going to get volume and you're going to get strikeouts, and are we going to see enough dominance? I just finished talking to Eno about Cease a lot, and we came down to, yeah, it's like six starts or so, six, seven that break one way or the other. Mm-hmm. And last year all broke negatively. And if those go well for him, then all of a sudden that's a good ERA ratio season almost, right? Yeah. Like it can be just as minimal as that. It is a good situation that he's in now. Right. You're going to get the run support, which is really nice to see. It's not a terrible defense behind him. So
there's depending on what happens with their shortstop situation.
Very fair.
Yes.
So we'll see. We'll see. I don't really want to draft him because of the anxiety. However, what I did in our mock draft was go Bradish, Bieber, and I wanted someone who had more of a definitive 200 strikeout season. So I did go Cease after that because of SP3. That kind of makes sense in my view, just for team construction for Roto. But for head-to-head, I probably might not do that.
Yeah, and I think you'd find now that he's on the Blue Jays, it would be really hard to get him as your SP3 in drafts.
Yeah, it's possible.
And there is a lot of argument out there that, you know, the Blue Jays are the one of the teams that got Robbie Ray to just throw the ball down the middle of the plate. And so maybe they can get Cease to do the same thing. Another guy that I have on the fringe of the top 25 that I think that I know you and I differ on a lot in our rankings.
Well, you're going to find out who that is, guys, after this break. Eric, so, who is this guy that we differ on our rankings a lot? He's fringe top 25.
So I have George Kirby ranked 17th.
Yeah, I know. I keep thinking like I'm pushing Kirby too high. At the same time, we haven't seen it yet, and I know it's there.
So the reason why I had him as a fringe top 25 pitcher is twofold. One, his fastball zone rate is bad, and it has it's been getting worse over the last two seasons. It was good in 2023. It was bad in 2024 and last year. Because I know that people will say, oh, well, he was battling injury last year. But yeah, but it was regressing already in 2024. And I know part of that is, as you have also pointed out, he's trying to elevate the four-seam fastball more, which we like, but that has also led to some games where the four-seam fastball is way up and above the zone, and so the zone rate goes down. And so that is like, it's a tricky reason. That's not the only reason I'm knocking him. His slider also had just a 14% swinging strike rate to right-handed hitters, which, as we talked about, is kind of like the cutoff that I came to realize for secondaries for top 25 starting pitchers. And so to me, I don't see a wipeout secondary to righties, which could happen. I mean, he could continue to develop. I don't see a wipeout secondary to righties, and he's going to face more righties than lefties, obviously. Then I see a four-seam fastball that he's continuing to struggle to locate or command the way we want to. And this is not me saying I don't see Kirby as a top 25 starting pitcher. I mean, I ranked him in my top 25. But I just see him a little fringier than somebody I could just put into my top 10 and say, hey, George Kirby is really good.
So one thing that I do want to note is consistently, I know you putting a knock against Chase's on four seamers, but George Kirby has been 98th percentile consistently on his four seamer swing strike rates, which is why, say for last year, he had 71% strike rates on his four seamer and or higher. And it was 64% last year, which I was fine with because I think he was giving in more than we would want to see. Mm-hmm. And the ICR, and this is against right-handers specifically, I'm talking about right now. Now, left-handers, it is a far less swing strike rate. So 12%, not the 17%, but still relatively similar strike rates overall for George Kirby against left-handers. But he gets hit harder from that one, which is not what you really want to see. One of the reasons that I was pushing up George Kirby more than I think I should is I got really amped by his approach in the final month of the year. And this was four seamers and sinkers upstairs, really good command of it, consistent. Blake Snell blueprint with sliders down, curveballs down as well, even going down and into left-handers with that slider. And what I did not realize at the time is that there's really only one game that I can see where he actually had a fair number of whiffs on that slider, more than four. And that is a little concerning. If I'm going to really buy into George Kirby having that slider figured out, then I would need to see more, at least one game, more than six whiffs on a slider. And I don't think that's the case. So I'm more inclined to lower him. And yes, Kyle Bland, that means you are right. I will have Chris Sanchez higher than Kyle, than George Kirby.
I do.
I will do it. And everyone right now listening is like, yeah, obviously, Nick, stop it. Okay. Because I do think that George Kirby is a better command pitcher than most. And to see an approach that clearly worked in September that I think is going to be carrying it over to next year inside of that park with amazing volume is an incredibly appealing thing. Not to mention, he's always been a whip darling. Even last year's 119 in an injury-riddled season is not the worst thing in the world. It's not like Framber Valdez or Logan Webb bad season. And it's just really tough. I just see a 190-inning guy with potential over 200 strikeouts and good wins and good ratios and all that kind of stuff. But that's, I see it could happen. And I've been ranking him at it. It will happen.
So. And that's why I like this exercise, because to me, it's also like, and I think actually Paul Spohr asked this specifically in First Pitch Arizona. And he's like, so what's the path to George Kirby being a lockdown top 25 guy? And my answer is kind of what you just talked about, is like, if we see some growth from that slider, that's a huge step from him. If that becomes a consistent plus whiff offering to righties, that checks a huge box that I have questions with right now. And that is an entirely feasible thing for George Kirby. And so that's why I'm keeping him in the top 25 currently. And that's also like, you start to make a list of things you want to watch in spring. Is like, I don't care how many strikeouts George Kirby gets in spring, or like, yeah, it's nice if he's throwing with good velocity. But now I'm like, how does that slider look?
Yeah.
And is that slider getting crazy? Is it getting like really bad swings? Because
yeah,
now,
I don't know if I'm going to be able to make any assessment. Just because it's spring, you don't know. Sure. You're going to see one video, and there's that. But
it gives you something specific to watch for, and whether you want to take. So you're not just like taking spring training. You're trying to find little bits of information.
I will be making it part of my tweets.
Yeah.
Okay. In March, in my SP roundup, as I do every day. If you guys don't know this, I did this last year. I'm going to do it again, which is essentially the roundup starts when spring training starts, and I'm just going to be reviewing everything.
I love it
all the time. So I got you guys.
Another guy who I think you and I both have outside the top 25.
Okay.
Who most people, I think, still rank inside the top 25.
Mm.
Is Framber Valdez.
Oh, yeah. No, I have him outside of it. Yeah.
I have Framber down at 29 right now. And my issues with him were primarily that he has a very limited pitch mix, one fastball variation, and is so entire. His success is so entirely curveball dependent.
Yes.
That even though he checks a lot of the boxes, like his main secondary pitch to both righties and lefties is a curve. It's his main secondary for strikes. It's his main secondary for whiffs. It's kind of what he uses for everything. When he faces lefties, he has a mediocre sinker and just a curveball. So like that's all he throws. And So when that curveball is on, as we've seen from him, he is a top 15 starter in fantasy.
Top 10.
And when the curveball is off, he is not in the top 30 or 40. And so it worries me to have a guy who's so reliant on one pitch.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I have, you guys might remember, I have Framber Valdez in this trio of Robbie Ray and Logan Webb, where they are expected to get a fair number of innings. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what term I want, but they have, I don't want to say anchor because anchor sounds like, oh, he's the anchor of my staff. This is good. I think of an anchor as slowing down your ship and dragging along, you know? So they have a stuffed animal syndrome where like maybe it's a stuffed animal of like the kid dragging along the ground, but they have the possibility of ruining a team.
It's like right? a ball and chain.
Yes. And we don't know what it's going to be. You're going to have a ball or they're going to chain you down. Yeah. Oh, there it is. Done. The ball and chain. So I try to avoid that where you can blink and it's July or August and you don't realize that this guy has 130 whip in 120 innings or so. And that is why your roto league isn't going as you want, right? Mm-hmm. That is what I'm trying to avoid as much as possible. And it's funny because a lot of guys would say, oh, that's a stable floor with Valdez or with Logan Webb or Robbie Ray. And it's not quite. They have this ball and chain tendency. So that has me away from Framber. It is a really good practice, though, as you're saying, with the top 25 set, because he does tick many of the boxes.
Yeah.
It's just only when the curveball is working.
You mentioned the next guy I want to talk about, because when I posted these rankings on Reddit, the biggest pushback I got was for my ranking of Logan Webb at 31. Mm. And everybody said Logan Webb is a top 20 starting pitcher locked in. Why do you have him so low? And maybe I do have him so low, so maybe we'll talk through this together. But my concerns with Logan Webb are that he has continued to kind of tinker with his arsenal, sometimes to a detrimental extent. His overall swinging strike rate, even with a nearly 2% increase last year, is still below league average and well below what you normally get from a top 25 starting pitcher. He's kind of gone this sinker-sweeper approach, but the sweeper had a sub 13% swinging strike rate to righties, which was below average for sweepers to righties, and also below average as a primary secondary to righties. The changeup still misses tons of bats, but he's just not using it to right-handed hitters as much as he did before. And so I have some concern about his ability to consistently miss bats. And I guess maybe I just don't trust what version of Logan Webb we're getting, because we're kind of always changing our approach a little bit. And am I being too harsh?
Yeah, I don't know. Logan Webb was a four-pitch guy initially. And then in the second half, what's interesting in the second half, like, it wasn't terrible. It wasn't nearly as bad as I thought it was. 24% K rate in his final 10 starts, for example, right? 317 ERA, 121 whip. That's actually even better than the whip he had the rest of the year. But Webb, as you mentioned, right, he had a certain approach with sweepers and cutters and sinkers and changeups, and that kind of went away over time to be more three-pitch with sinkers and changeups and sweepers and no cutters really anymore. I just go back and forth, and it's just so difficult because, right, he is a ball and change. He can be either one. I don't think that he has the same sinker changeup combo that he used to. I don't think it's quite as dominant. Maybe batters are just more used to it than it was in the past. It also is something that he's very reliant on the defense that the Giants provide him.
Yeah.
So, you know, monitor that. They had an exceptional defense about 2 years ago, 2-3 years ago, and that really affected his hit rate, which was closer to 8 than it is at 9 now. I might be raising him up a little bit only because of just, yes, he has had this insane amount of volume. He is consistently last year's strikeout consistency is better than I had initially thought. But the only real negative is the whip. And if that's what it is, when the lowest has been is a 124 last year, where the hit rate of 9.1 likely gets a little bit better from a 349 BABIP that it was third percentile. And I'm playing that game for a second, but I am going to just harp on that for a moment, which is by far his worst of his career, and Matt Chapman's still there. And like, that shouldn't be that bad.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I will be raising him up, but I don't know where. I don't know. It's Logan Webb.
He's tough, and I found his teammate a little tough for me too, Robbie Ray.
Yeah.
Because I had Robbie Ray in the presentation as a top 25 fade. I currently have him outside of the top 25 in the same tier around, in the tier below Logan Webb. I have him 37th right now. The two big things were like his fastball velocity is slightly below average for lefties too, not just in general.
Good point.
And the fastball command, and which we know, and that's always been the thing for him. He has four pitches, just one fastball variation. He only throws two pitches to lefties, the fastball and the slider. And so when that four-seam fastball command is not there, he kind of throws one pitch to lefties. And so, but he checked all the other boxes. The hit suppression has been there for his career. His pitch is grayed out well. He's got a swinging strike rate to both righties, or swinging strike pitch to both righties and lefties. 18.4% strikeout minus walk rate for his career. We know he can miss bats. So like, I get it. And maybe I'm being too harsh on Robbie Ray by putting him 37th.
Yeah. So I remember at the beginning of the year, you know, he wasn't doing so great the first couple starts, and there was a lot of negativity. But starting on April 26th, 27 starts after 3.590 ERA, 1.16 whip, 25% K rate. And it can be an absolute wreck watching him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I do even want to mention how bad his September was. If you had Robbie Ray this past year, you just stopped starting him. It was not worth it. So the volatility itself, I mean, really, I just keep going back to this of, if I have this guy rostered on my team, how good do I feel? Just how inherently good do I feel having this player? Yeah. Not necessarily looking at his strikeout rate or his CSW, just do I feel like every single night he's going to be very good? And do I get anxious watching them, right? And when they don't do well, is it something that they feel like, oh man, this guy just isn't good? Or like, you see it happening right in front of your eyes. And Robbie Ray is certainly one of those that fits the latter of it. Just you watch it and go, what is going on? This is terrible. And I just might avoid it because of that. I mean, even his season to season, you kind of don't even know a lot. I mean, sure, he was great before Tommy John, and then really had two lost seasons before this. But it's just been a massive, tumultuous event of Robbie Ray the pitcher. And I will mention 182 innings is not 207 between him and Logan Webb. So I very much regret putting Robbie Ray ahead of Logan Webb already for that reason. It's all so difficult. Now, I will say that Robbie Ray, better in a 15-teamer than some of the younger arms that we won't see get the potential to be a top 25 because they won't have that volume.
Yeah. Right?
So that is something to consider. Rostering Robbie Ray is anxiety riddled.
Speaking of volume, the next guy is another lefty who I had as a fringe top 25 player, and I have ranked above Robbie Ray at starting pitcher 26 right now. And I'm like, maybe I'm going too gaga for Nick Lodolo.
I knew that's who it was. It's right there.
Who checks so many boxes here.
Yeah.
Four pitch mix, including two fastball variations. The pitch mix grades out really well. His curve had a nearly 21% swinging strike rate to righties. His change also had a nearly 16% swinging strike rate to righties. So that's two. His curve had a 19.5% swing strike rate to lefties. The fastball velocity at 94 is only slightly below average. The fastball zone rate is basically league average. The hit suppression has been really good over the last 2 years, but there's durability concerns and he pitches in a terrible home ballpark. And so so much of Nick Lodolo, I'm like, yeah, that's a top 25 starter. Like I would rank him over Dylan Cease without even thinking. And then you're like, yeah, but he gets hurt a lot and his home park isn't good. And so now I'm trying to figure out how to factor that all into the mix.
So Nick Lodolo had the most strikeouts of his career last year and in the most starts, not much of a surprise, the most innings, but it was 155, right? Mm-hmm. And it was 28 starts, 156 innings. But that's something to think about here, right? I mean, that is really a big gap between him and Logan Webb then, or Dylan Cease or so, just in the strikeout department. I mean, that's 33% fewer strikeouts. Right. Right. That's a quarter of theirs, but yeah, 33% more strikeouts from those other guys, if not more. So it's also Nick Lodolo finally had his first season of actual consistency on the mound and being able to figure himself out. And I loved what I saw. I love the changeup down and away. I love the fastball up and in. I love the curveball game mixed in as well. He finally felt comfortable and it was awesome. And I hate that he just doesn't go long enough.
Yeah.
He's just not at that point yet. And for me to put him higher or much higher on my ranks is saying he is going to go 180 innings this year.
Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah. That's all totally valid. I'm probably going to move him down as we're doing this. You know, it's only he's 26, 27. It was his fourth year. So he doesn't have like a glass now track record of a lot of MLB years without the volume, but he does have, you know, four seasons and three of them are poor volume. So I get it. That makes total sense to me.
It's not even just that. It's the injuries. Yes, he got hurt and whatnot. He still went 28 games and was 156 innings. So let's even say that those 20 games, you get four more starts because of 32 in a season is just generally what we expect of any starter going regularly these days. Mm-hmm. He did play in 29 games, but just gonna ignore that. So then you have it as, all right, four more starts at like 5 2/3. So that's 20-ish, 22 more innings or so. That's 178,
yeah,
right? And so that isn't even, you know, there's some guys that will go 32 starts and they'll be 190, 200 or so. And I don't see Nick Lodolo as that. So for him to get to the 180 or to get to the 170 is like you have to start every day. And considering he does not have it, it's harder to do. Now, 10, 12 teamers, it's more appealing to go for Nick Lodolo because what I'm saying is the total volume, but generally he's still productive. I think he's still going to help you on your rosters. So this is the endless debate of what is more valuable, the long-term or the, you know, the density, right?
Right.
And that's up to you to decide. I would probably prefer Nick Lodolo over Robbie Ray just because I have less anxiety day to day.
I'm still in that boat. Even if I lower Nick Lodolo, I'm still in the Lodolo over Ray boat.
I'm going to have Webb and Framber above Nick Lodolo, though.
I have just made that change as well. I have Nick Lodolo in a group with some pitchers we'll talk about later.
Sure.
Before we get to the exciting young pitchers, I wanted to talk to you about two teammates. One of which who finished inside the top 25 this year, and another who I believe you may have ranked inside the top 25 for next year. And it's Drew Rasmussen and Ryan Pepiot.
Oh, man.
Rasmussen finished inside the top 25 this year, despite, you know, innings concerns. Again, he was one of the ones at the bottom, so in a fully healthy season, maybe he finishes in the mid-30s somewhere. But again, that's a solid starter. His concerns were swinging strike rate, overall strikeout rate, that his swinging strike rate numbers were low, that he had an overall swinging strike rate under 12%. He did not have a secondary to hitters of both handedness that had a 15% swinging strike rate. We also know there's some minor innings concerns with him. So if he's not going to miss tons of bats and not pitch 190 innings, what's his overall strikeout upside? But he's been really good other than that. And Pepiot didn't deliver a top 25 season this year, but a lot of that, maybe not a lot of that, some of that could be rectified by a move back to Tropicana, which should help some of the homer to fly ball issues that kind of plagued him a little bit. I'm curious if you have a firm take on either of these guys as a definitive top 25 starter pitcher.
Man, the more and more I think about Ryan Pepiot, the more I'm in, because he did just go 31 starts. Mm-hmm. And yeah, 3.86 ERA fueled by home runs, 116 whip, 25% K rate. What he does is he has a really good fastball. He's improved his cutter in there. Changeup is still great. And of course there's a slider. And now that he's going to go from George Steinbrenner to Tropicana, I can't express enough what it does also to your confidence. He hasn't hurt. He hasn't, 2 years now with Tampa Bay, 360 and a 115 whip, and 386 and a 116 whip with strikeouts in both. Sign me up. I mean, he's their ace.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, he's their guy. He's their opening day starter.
Nominally, Shane McClanahan is, but.
Oh, yes, sure. But Ryan Pepiot is going to be throwing 32 games, 32 starts or so. He just won 31. So you have that there. I think it gets more efficient away from George Steinbrenner Field. He has the strikeout ability. I think the walk rate gets better because of the adjustment. The hit rate's still depressed. Home runs go down. Like, it's all really good there. I think with Drew Rasmussen, I find it harder to buy into, because I think we just still haven't seen him be trusted and let loose in the same way that Ryan Pepiot has. Also, the strikeout rate is low. Is he going to be able to maintain a 7 hit per 9? I don't think so.
Sure.
That's just my 2 cents there. And yeah, it's, I'm very interested in Drew Rasmussen, because again, I think it's going to be a better season. Circumstances of the home park and that the Rays, like, okay, we babied you a bit and you were able to be let loose. You were fine. Maybe the Rays still don't fully let him go, though, because it worked last year.
Right.
You know? It's not a given that now he's going to go 6 innings every time. But both pitchers, to me, I think are two that I'm going to be targeting a lot, honestly.
Yeah.
The Rays are also going to likely win more games this year than they did last year. Last year was a down year, and I don't think the Rays are just going to stay down there for another year.
And we'll see what they do in the offseason, but I would agree. And I think that, I am inclined to move Pepiot up. I had Rasmussen over Pepiot. I think that was too much focus on what happened last year and not enough on their overall skill sets as pitchers. And this presentation was useful for me to see, maybe I was too low on Rasmussen coming into the year, but I'd be too high on him by just looking at, what he did on the field and not the underlying skill set. But, Rasmussen to me fits, I feel like he's kind of Logan Webb-ish without the safety of volume that you get from Logan Webb. Like, you're not going to get a really high swinging strike rate, but you also are probably going to get pretty solid ratios on a team that I imagine will be similar in terms of strength of schedule, wins, et cetera, between the Rays and the Giants. But I might get 170 innings from Rasmussen and I could get 200 from Logan Webb, and that's valuable.
So this is, the biggest point I want to make. About essentially what volume means. How many strikeouts do you think that Drew Rasmussen had last year? He had 150 innings. And that's 31 games, 150 innings.
How many? 141.
Nope, 127.
Okay, that's
right. Fun. Logan Webb had 224.
Right.
And yes, 207 innings. Sure. But that's about 100 more strikeouts in 50 more innings, right? Yeah. And I've absolutely made the point being, hey, cool, 26% K rate from Logan Webb. That maybe isn't what you're going to get. Sure, but I don't see him necessarily as a 21% strikeout rate guy. And even then, when Logan Webb had that, his strikeout total that year was 172.
Yeah.
Right? So yeah. it's... is something to really consider, that you're really buying for the whip with Drew Rasmussen, which isn't a bad thing. It's just that that's it. The hardest thing to find later in drafts is strikeout total.
Yeah.
It's just, you won't get it. And you can find ERA whip easier.
Super valuable point there. We're going to move on to some more trendy and exciting names, but we're going to do that after this break. We're going to start with one that we probably don't need to belabor the point, because I think you and I both firmly believe that Eury Pérez is a top 25 starting pitcher.
Oh, he's so fun. It's except that he just needs the secondaries to come through, and the four seamer is so great, but he just, come on. You can't throw up a 58% strike rate on your slider.
Right. It's a strike rate issue. It is not a swing and miss issue, because he has two variations of the slider. He has the slider and a sweeper. The sweeper had a 22% swinging strike rate to righties, and the slider, the harder slider, had a 21% swinging strike rate to lefties. The command works on the fastball, though. And so that's why I'm kind of like, if we can get ahead with the fastball, I know that it would be great if the secondaries were better. But
command-ish. It's control.
Sure.
It's control. I know this is a real point of it, because he does throw a very
valid point
in the middle to lefties and righties with that four seamer. It is not, I can't tell you how many times I watch Eury Pérez pitch and he's like, okay, it's a full count. I'm just going to throw as many four seamers as I can, but they just keep getting fouled off because he can't get it around the edge at all. And he just needs to execute a really good one, and he can't quite get there. Now, that isn't necessarily the future of Eury Pérez, and the fact that he had a mistake rate of under 2% against lefties with that four-seamer is amazing. It's still that little bit of a knock. It's why he had a 10% swing strike rate with a four-seamer to right-handers, where you're like, wait, that shouldn't be the case. You have an elite velocity, a 17-inch IVB pitch with 80th percentile flatness. Like, this is not normal. It's average extension. Like, you should be absurdly good with it. 90 percentile PLV. It's so good. But yeah, you just gotta command it just a little bit better, and then hopefully have that curveball, slider, sweeper as that nullifier in the zone too. He's really close.
Yeah,
it is riskier than I want it to be.
Riskier for sure. I'm still in this year, but I am in, you know, acknowledging the risk of it. There are some rumblings that the Marlins are working on a sinker with him, much like they did with Edward Cabrera last year, which could help to alleviate some of the, hey, I can throw this fastball for a strike, but not pinpoint exactly where it is. If righties now have two fastballs to worry about, it can help him a little bit. The other exciting young pitcher who I have lowered, not considerably, but lowered consistently since we've started ranking, is Jacob Mizrowski.
Yeah,
I am. The reasons behind that kind of jumped out for me, where like, I know where we go, you know, we have googly eyes about the strikeouts.
Oh,
and they are tremendous.
The stuff is insane. But
there's a couple things that stood out that I thought was a little weird to me. First of all, we know the walk rate is super high. And that led to a strikeout minus walk rate that, you know, was still elevated because he strikes out a lot of guys. But there was reliever risk for Mizrowski coming into last year, and so we know there are some command issues. He has four pitches. He has just one fastball variation. The four-seam fastball is his primary swinging strike rate pitch to righties, so much so that his best secondary to righties, the slider, has just an 11% swinging strike rate to righties.
Yeah, it's wild.
And so you're like, okay, he still misses lots of bats to righties. Like, why are we upset about that? And I'm not, but I'm just saying it's really just a fastball to righties. Like, that's really what it is. He has a slider and a curve that he also throws to righties, but they don't really miss lots of bats. The curve, he misses bats to lefties. The curve is a really good pitch to lefties. But I don't know. Like, that is an unfinished product, which we know, but that's a volatility that makes it hard for me to put him I think I had him like 16 or 17 in my first rankings, and now he's like down closer to 25. And
so, like, maybe I can explain this actually really quickly. So the four seamer's coming at 99, the slider at 94. Mm-hmm. But where he's placing the slider is actually where the fastball is. So what's going on is that every batter needs to gear up for the heater. And these are generally in the upper third of the zone.
Right.
And maybe middle, upper third, maybe slightly away from right-handers. And when it's not the four-seamer, they're trying to hold up long enough to make contact with the slider. And they're generally successful at it. But it's a 32% ICR. They're not hitting it well.
Right. And he has a 17% called strike rate on the slider to righties, which is well above league average. And that indicates a little bit of, like, he throws that pitch in the zone frequently.
Right. Well, he's just kind of throwing it the same way of his four seamer. So a lot of times he'll come back down from the top, kind of like the Cannibal McSanchez with a cutter, and he's not throwing it low. The slider to right-handers there, it's a low lock. Low location is fourth percentile. Mm-hmm. And that's just actually overall, I should say, not just the right-handers. It's still 36%. And is YM lock, that is the height middle, is third percentile, while his high location is 93rd percentile. 93rd
percentile, yeah.
Right? There you go. It's all kind of right there in front of you. And the thing that would make Jacob Mizorowski the toughest of tough is just to get that low lock up, you know, and reduce the high lock. And that's really it. And I'm not saying that is obvious and he's going to do it. I'm not actually, because I think he's a thrower, not a pitcher.
Yes.
And he's just, I need just to throw strikes and I'll be good. And honestly, yeah, that is correct. He needs to throw strikes and he will be good. He needs to be better than a 64% strike rate on his slider overall. You know, he needs his four seamer to be a 70-71%. And if that happens, then yeah, he will be better. It's just, I find it really hard to roster throwers, not pitchers, in the top 20.
Yeah.
But I have him at 20 right now because it's just, you are destined to be a 30-35% strikeout rate guy.
Like, I have him down at 22. And as we've been talking, I moved Dylan Cease to 20. I have him right ahead of Dylan Cease. I have Mizorowski 22 and Cease 23. We'll see how I go on that. But I can no longer rank him inside of the top 20. There are guys I would rather have. Frankly, I would draft Yuri Perez before I would draft
Mizorowski. I think I have to do that. I think I would rather have Nick Pivetta, which sounds wild to me. But I can bank on the innings more. With Pivetta, and I don't think that what he's done is necessarily, you know, it's just, yeah, lowered the home runs drastically.
Yeah.
But the dead end ball is a cool thing. Hmm. And Freddie Peralta, I'm like, sure, fine.
Yeah, I have Peralta ahead of him.
I think I have to put Logan Webb ahead of it. I mean, I've talked myself into it, but I think I need to. So I mean, I'm gonna have a renaissance of things there. And if you want to talk about ball and chain, I mean, yeah, Jacob Mizorowski could be that. So 4 ERA and a 1.24 whip, like, it's not a guarantee that he's just going to be pristine every night. He's not at that point yet.
Yeah.
So it's, and he's not efficient in going to go deep into these games. He's not going to be a consistent six inning guy yet. It's tough.
You're making me make some hard decisions here.
Oh man.
Let's talk about another rookie who people are really impressed by, but I came away with some minor concerns. And it's Cam Schlittler, who I have ranked 34th. So I don't consider that to be down on Cam Schlittler. I think that's still a pretty solid ranking for him. The things that concern me are twofold. One, well, first of all, I think we just need to note he came out of nowhere because of a massive jump in velocity, which really allowed all of his stuff to tick up. And so that's great. But I also think we need to acknowledge that this is a prospect with not a long track record of being a top prospect because of a major jump this year. And that could mean, hey, this is for real. I improved tremendously and this is great. It could also mean maybe last year was a little bit well, maybe we'll regress a little bit from last year. And so last year was kind of like everything clicking a little bit more than would be normally. The things that stood out to me were, first of all, I know you, even though it's your stat, I know you tell people, don't just look at PLV and say, hey, you know, he has a bad PLV, so he's bad. But I did find that PLV did have some correlation to the guys who were in the top 25.
Oh, absolutely.
Had strong PLVs. His was a 4.95, which was below the league average for starting pitchers of 5.01. He has a four pitch mix. Three of them are fastball variations: the four seamer, the cutter, and the sinker. Righties only get fastball variations. Righties get four seam, cutter, sinker. Lefties get a curve. The cutter is his main secondary pitch to both righties and lefties. It has just an 11.6% swinging strike rate to righties and a 13.7% swinging strike rate to lefties. So his main secondary is a cutter that has below average swinging strike rates to both righties and lefties, which means it's really just a fastball that's playing up here a lot. His fastball command was also average to below average when he came up. And so even though, like, I understand the excitement for him, I have him ranked like inside my top 35 starters, right? I think that's a ranking that says this guy has talent. There are enough concerns here that, like, I can't put him over guys like Pepio, over guys like, you know, Dylan Cease, Imanaga. I have him ranked below Michael King right now because, like, yeah, when Michael King was healthy, he was pitching far better than that. And so, you know, am I really convinced that Cam Schlittler is going to pitch for sure more innings than Michael King next year? No.
Yeah. Oh, man. So this is kind of where I'm at with Cam. On one side, I'm like, I don't know, internally, I just see him as a massive red flag for injury, right? Like, how can you not? You just had, as you mentioned, massive increase in velocity. They certainly worked him later on in the year. There's no way he's going to be able to hold 98. He's young in this way. We generally see these young flamethrowers, they kind of sputter out. You know, they gutter quickly, right? And so there's that. There's that issue right off the bat. Then, as you mentioned, the four-seamer doesn't grade well with PLV. I like to look at with Cam his final eight games because I feel like that game on August 20th was when he finally actually figured out who he was. If you don't remember, he was throwing sweepers a lot before then. Mm-hmm. And that is when he turned into the three pitch guy for the most part, sometimes with sinkers too, but really understand that the cutter is the pitch and the cutter really is a slider. It's like 91, 92, because he throws 98. You normally see that variation of 67 miles per hour on your slider. And there it is, right? If he's throwing 95, that would be down to 87 or whatever. And everyone would be like, yeah, that makes sense. That's kind of how I see it. That's why you see more cutters to right-handers. And then you see the curve introduced against lefties. And that pitch over his last eight games was so good. A 5.43 PLV. The swing strike rate to right-handers was not good at 9.2%, but a great K rate at 38%. And not good in the strike realm, 54%. He has work to do locating this pitch, but it is what he's comfortable with now. But then against lefties was phenomenal, 50% swing strike rate, 64% strike rate overall. But yeah, it's a four seamer. The four seamer is the biggest question of like how good actually is it and how reliant is it on the velocity. PLV hated against lefties. Oh my gosh. Cam Schlittler's four seamer is a 4.57, which is just so bad, but it's such good results of like a 16% swing strike rate, 38% K rate. But it got hit hard at a 48% ICR when it was hit. This is all to say that what Cam has, if Cam is really the same guy in August and September that we see next year, then I'm stoked. I mean, the Yankees are going to absolutely just have him go every 5 days. He was efficient, oddly enough. That allowed him to go deeper into games than we thought he would. And I do want to believe that the command of that cutter to right-hander specifically improves, right? That he has, you know, generally we do see these steps being taken and you get a little bit better with these pitches the more that you like are confident with it and you just keep sticking with it. And also, yeah, this is riskier than I should be targeting. I should be going for Ryan Pepiot and Drew Rasmussen more than this, right? Perez, Jacob Mizorowski. It just makes more sense to go with those than with Schlittler. So it's tough.
Two more young names to target, to discuss here. One is Nolan McLean. And to me, Nolan McLean is clearly outside of this. Like, if you're talking about young pitchers and entering their second year, to me, I have like a Bubba Chandler, Cam Schlittler, Chase, Mizorowski, I have separate.
Yeah, sure.
I have like Bubba Chandler, Cam Schlittler, Chase Burns group.
And McLean is out of it, right?
I have McLean out of
that. Yeah, this is so wild because it's not how everyone else is treating it, Eric.
I know. And so a couple of things stood out to me.
Okay.
One, PLV again, below average grades for him. Primary sinker, commands it well in the zone. Swinging strike rate of just 12% was below average. Again, if you're a primary sinker baller, that can happen. Below average for top 25 starting pitchers for sure. And then I look at, okay, what was his swinging strike rate? Sorry, what was his swing and miss pitch to righties? You say, oh, it's a curveball. 24.3% swinging strike rate to righties. That's great. Yeah, but he used it 10% of the time to righties. So he's not using it often. He has the sinker to righties, which also doesn't miss a lot of bats. So his primary secondary to righties based on usage is a sweeper.
Yeah, sweeper.
But that sweeper has a 5.8% swinging strike rate to righties. It did not miss bats at all in any way, shape, or form. And again, he didn't have a long stay in the big leagues.
Eight starts. Samples. This is one of the more shocking, aggressive drafted pitchers over eight starts that I've ever seen. That's really how I'll say he had multiple games of just five innings. Four of these eight are under six.
Right.
The 12% overall swing strike rate.
Last year was his first year as a full-time starter full-time pitcher because he was a two-way guy. And so I get that. And I get that there's an argument that there could still be more room for growth as he continues to be a full-time starter. But I don't know that I could draft him on that potential hypothetical upside when what I see right now is a good starting pitcher with the possibility to be a really good starting pitcher who has a lot of flaws to iron out, in particular his ability to miss bats consistently.
And also his sinker to lefties had a 16% mistake rate last year. Oh, hey, that was his number one thrown pitch to lefties. That is scary. I mean, yes, 22% usage, 21% sweeper, 19% curve, but that curve and sweeper, as you were mentioning, not consistent strike pitches. It was sinker all the time. And 47% ICR, 412 BABIP, for good reason. He actually allowed one fewer hit than PLV things. I see McLean as someone who needs to be better. And 30% K rate, no. This is not going to be repeated. He is not that guy. I think actually I can look at it this way. Put away rate, y'all. This is the last thing we're going to say because Eric's got to go. I got to go. Put away rates is your biggest asset here. What are normal put away rates? Okay, against lefties, we saw 27% on the sinker and 31% on the curveball. Those are both absurdly high, and those are going to come down. Okay, that's going to regress. What about against righties? The sinker had a 33% put away rate to righties. That, again, absurdly high is going to regress. Sure, sweepers should be better than 15% to right-handers, absolutely. And 12.5% to lefties, yeah, probably can get better too. But yeah, that is how he got his strikeouts. And you should be seeing 20%, 23% or so is where I would feel comfortable, where it could be pushed even higher, you know, in a good year or so. But that would say to me, okay, cool. He'd be like a 27 to 30% strikeout rate guy. No, I'm seeing like a 23% strikeout rate guy here. And unless the sweeper all of a sudden figures out how to become a swinging strike rate pitch to right-handers. So yeah, I'm not saying he's going to be bad, as you mentioned, but there are clear warning signs that he is not a 206 ERA, 104 whip, 30% K rate guy who can go six innings consistently for the Mets.
Can we give the people one more quick one?
Yes.
We got to talk about Treya Savage because it's a lot of playoff tax here. We only have 14 innings of regular season sample size to work with at the MLB level. There were some concerns. The four-seam fastball doesn't miss bats, had a well below average strike rate, and had a below average zone rate. So it's a little bit of like the Kevin, and his primary is a splitter, right? It's a little bit of the Kevin Gausman, except that the slider is better than Gausman's.
I'm going to push back here because 45% usage of slider to righties versus 16% splitter to righties.
Yes. Okay. You're talking about in terms of me saying primary. Yes.
Yeah. Because it's really like you go splitter first against lefties and slider first against righties. And that's the biggest difference between Savage and Gausman.
Well, then that to me is in that, then that maybe makes him less interesting to me. Because the slider wasn't actually a great pitch. So it graded out poorly by PLV. If you're looking at to righties, it had, again, we're talking super small.
No, I'm with you, but yeah, keep going.
61.5% ICR to righties, 13% swinging strike rate, which isn't bad, but is below the level we were talking about. Commands it in the zone well, but an 11% mistake rate to righties on the slider, probably why it got hit really hard too. So we're not missing, it's not missing the bats of a plus secondary pitch. It's getting hit hard by righties. And again, we are working off small sample sizes with Treya Savage. That's all we have at the MLB level. But that concerns me as your primary pitch to righties, and primary pitch meaning he used it more to righties than his four-seam fastball, which also didn't miss bats to righties, by the way. It's just a 7% swinging strike rate. So I see a world where like the splitter is a really good pitch and it eats up lefties and he's gonna crush lefties and he may have some really poor starts against righties.
Okay, so I just made a face. I'm like, you know what? We only have three starts here. And I do want to mention, I feel really weird judging Savage from those three games, because as I was just saying with Cam Schlittler, like I just knocked out his three games and talked about his last eight, right? It takes a moment for these guys to get into the groove.
And this isn't including any of the playoff games either.
Right.
You should just know.
Right. And we have more data from playoffs than we do in the regular season. And the swing strike rate of his slider in the last game that we saw was, I'm sorry. Savant just changed all of their things. I'm trying to find, he had 14 whiffs on his slider in, how many did he throw? 29. Swings.
I see you have
14 over 45. There
it is. Pitcher list has 7 whiffs on 31 sliders.
I'm talking about the Dodgers Blue Jays game 7 of the World Series or whatever the last game he pitched in.
Got it.
He had a 14 over 45 whiff game with the slider. Savant's game player breakdown game feed stuff is just new now. Fast didn't tell me they were doing this. It is kind of cool. They have a velocity by inning now and usage through the time of the order, which is the first pitch strikes. Hey, look at all this stuff. But now I'm like trying to do my CSW calculations. They call it C strike plus whiff. What is this? Unbelievable, Eric. It's CSW. It's CSW. there is something to be said about that from you, Savage, right? Like, he clearly had better feel for it over time. Slider against the Yankees was 5 over 14 whiffs. So there you go again. That's a very good 30% swing strike rate. In that Yankee start where he had a ton of strikeouts as well. I think the slider, especially watching him in the playoffs, was better than what we saw in the regular season. And what's hard for me to assess is, okay, how bad is the fastball? You know, how much are we going to see the volatility of needing the slider and the splitter to be everything And is the fastball attack angle with the splitters just so strange and so weird with the slider that like, and the splitter, that it's good enough, that it's better than what we saw in those three games, that the general PLV of it doesn't quite matter because there isn't that extra added deception of weird arm angle that you can never quantify. I generally lean against that after Tristan Cockcroft told me to be against it back in 2016. I was like, you know what? That's pretty smart. But I go back and forth. And what I am going to say to everyone is if they haven't done it before, just don't overpay for them to do it the first time.
Yep. And that's an interesting thing to consider as we go through these rankings. We're going to have one more podcast here probably next week coming out to you guys before the holidays and the Nick's wedding and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah. I'll be like off the grid for two weeks.
So we're going to give Nick some time, but we'll be back here for one more. And then everybody will hopefully enjoy all of their holidays and their family time or their alone time, because alone time is also super important and needed.
Super important.
And so do you, whatever you're going to wind up doing. I love an action movie on the couch with some popcorn by myself. So,
Hopefully you saw my Halloween costume.
Yeah. So that's going to do it for us on this episode, talking about potential top 25 starting pitchers. I'm Eric Samulski, the Pelican.
I'm Nick Pollock, the Lion.
And I'm going to go make a list of some action movies I'm going to watch over this holiday season.